Hello, I am back for another cynical supplement. Oh my god, like this has been a run. We haven't gone this long without doing a full show in quite a long time. Maybe in our full history, I think. I don't know if you ever taken like a month break. Yeah, I don't know. Post E3, what can I say? But moving on from that, I'm just going to be here rapping by myself about stuff. If you are wondering when our next full episode is, hopefully this weekend. I don't know, see if I can rustle up the guys. It's getting more and more difficult to get a schedule together. But maybe, yeah, either this week or the weekend after that. That's all I can really say. I cannot predict the future, apparently. But this week I will be talking about a couple things. There isn't much news, but there was a, well, not necessarily an announcement, but a great trailer for a game I've been looking forward to for a while now, but forgot even existed, and the trailer got me super hyped again. There is a returning character to an old series, which makes for one of the best gaming I've done in quite a while. Well, I don't know, it's one of those tough years that you could say that, because I know Persona 5 and Zelda were both great, but it was good. It was a good time. And then finally, I'll be talking about some recent anime and movies. What I'm going to talk about? Well, find out later in this episode. It's Castlevania Spider-Man. This is going to be Castlevania Spider-Man. All right. So, first up, the only piece of news I really care about this week, and it's kind of hilarious to me that this is the news I care about, but Layton's Mystery Journey, Catriel and the Millionaire's Conspiracy. What the fuck is that, you ask? That is the new Professor Layton game for the 3DS, which has just gotten a new trailer, which shows a bunch of the anime in it. And holy shit, they've gone extra anime with the new Layton game, but in a good way. It's not like bad anime. It is Layton's daughter picking up the torch. It's been since 2013, I think. I was looking it up, since the last Layton game. And not only is Catriel totally cool and has got a weird dog with a voice that I don't particularly like, but whatever, but she's not only a puzzle master or puzzle solver, but she also runs a detective agency, which brings upon the world like a fusion of the two things I love most in mobile games, which is like puzzles and like crime, like solving mysteries. That in the one thing with Layton production quality sounds freaking awesome. Lots of more voice acting, at least in the trailer we got. And I bet there's going to be more voice acting in the game than what we've expected in the past. Overall, super hyped. Like, go watch the trailer if you've ever been even remotely interested in a 3DS puzzle game. This looks so cool. I really like Catriel. She's a really cool main character. I love the fact that she's starting detective agency. I love the fact that she's solving crimes and mysteries in this game alongside puzzles. But puzzles is totally still in there, and you see some of the puzzles in the trailer. Like, it's a very excellent all-round trailer. And the game looks ultra promising, and it is coming out in like 9 days. Like, it's coming out the 20th of July, really soon. I cannot wait. It's crazy that I'm going to be putting Nier Automata on hold yet again because of Professor Layton. But, well, not Professor Layton, Layton. But hey, that's how the cookie crumbles. I will eventually get to Nier. That has to happen for Game of the Year. That's the news. That's essentially it. Like, there's a bunch of other like small pieces of news that I'm not particularly interested in. And this isn't necessarily the best or most in-depth news podcast. This isn't necessarily going to go for that stuff. But hey, that's my pick of the news this week. The other thing is kind of news, but not really, since it's a game that I've been playing. And this is the only game we'll be talking about this week. It's going to be a short episode, but there you go. Diablo 3 has gotten the original Edgelord himself, the Necromancer. He's back. In a character pack, and how this works is it's kind of expensive. So you there's no, on PC, there's no package deal. You have to buy Diablo 3 and the expansion. There's package deals for that, so you can get what's called a battle chest, I believe, and that comes with Diablo 3 and its expansion. and maybe some DLC on top of that, but you definitely get those two. But then, and that usually goes like $28 US or so. But then for an additional purchase on top of that for $15 US, roughly, I think it was, is the Necromancer DLC, which is a character pack, which includes a couple of, like a bunch of new items in the game and the Necromancer, who you can play through the entire storyline of Diablo 3, including the expansion Reaper of Souls. And that's what I did. So hell yeah, I've forgotten how good Diablo 3 was, and that's back when I played it, which was before they fixed the itemized, well, the loot in that game, and before they took out the auction house. So that's how long ago it was since I last played Diablo 3. I never played Reaper of Souls, and I was wasn't necessarily holding up. I just wasn't interested in it at all. But my first ever character I played in Diablo 2 was the Necromancer. He always seemed like he's an edgelord. I don't know. Maybe it's like signs of my youth of like being like whatever 12 or 13 or what the fuck I was. But I was like, he was the coolest thing in that game at the time. And I have like really fond memories of that class in general, like fucking firing bone spears around. I don't know. So when I saw that the Necromancer was coming to Diablo 3, I think it was 2 years ago or something when they announced it, I was overjoyed and then totally forgot about it because it has been like freaking 2 years. They worked on it. And finally, just a couple of days now ago, maybe like a week or so ago, they released the Necromancer for Diablo 3 to the public. It's been in beta service, but this is like the public paid release. And of course, I immediately bought the expansion and bought the Necromancer pack and played it. So I played this last week the entirety of Diablo 3 again as the Necromancer, and I had an absolute blast. Like, they've changed so much about that game in terms of just the fundamental economy of it. Like, the gameplay is still what it used to be, and that's great. Like, it's an excellent gameplay loop. That game plays fantastic. It looks old, but it's got an art style to it, so it's not doesn't look bad. It's all about the feel of moving around, killing monsters, getting loot, equipping loot, moving around, killing monsters, and that loop playing out endlessly, to the point where, and I think we might have talked about this last year or so, but they now took out like the Diablo 2 style progression in that game, in that it doesn't just go normal, then Nightmare, then Hell, or whatever it was. I think it was normal Nightmare Hell. It is now, it has normal, I think it was hard, very hard, or hard, expert, master, and then you have torment levels. And torment levels are just additional layers of difficulty over master, and I would say that, and there's 13 torment levels. So the game has, what, 16 difficulty levels, of which you can pick between any of them, if you've played through the original game. But if you come to it new, I think you can go up to expert, which is like hard or so, I would say. That said, like, essentially all the difficult levels really do is increase the HP and damage of the enemies, to the point where at some point enemies have literally millions, if not billions, of health. And that sounds like exaggeration, but no, that's actually like you could turn off health numbers, and no, they have billions of health at higher torment levels. So I went from playing that game from start to finish with a friend at Torment 1, which is, I would say, the equivalent of Nightmare, maybe easier than Nightmare in the original Diablo 3, and Diablo 2 as well. Nightmare might be Torment 5 or so. Because, yeah, even though they added more difficult levels, it's not like they step up to the same degree, because if people remember Diablo 3, like, midway through Nightmare, that game got tough, especially with how hard it was to get loot in it because of the auction house at the time. They expected you to trade for good loot rather than find good loot. So now you're getting good loot, and that keeps the difficulty like curve kind of flat. It's more like a line that just slowly, linearly gets a little bit more difficult. But if you keep up with your gear, it just kind of flatlines and never gets really more difficult. However, as you do progress, and if you do keep upping the torment level as the game gets easy for you, that is a very fun loop. And what ended up happening is I think we finished the game entirely, the actual main storyline, including Reaper of Souls, at like Torment 3. So we went from Torment 1 to Torment 3 as the game progressed. And that was epically fun. And the last, like the final boss, like one shots you if you fuck up. And it was actually fun. And that kept it interesting. But the cool thing is the post game content of that game, you have these things called rifts, which are essentially like randomized dungeons that you can jump into, that you can have more interesting loot drops in terms of like the different ways to change how your character can work, including like having permanent effects of some of the legendary items you have found over your adventures just applied to your character, which you can change up at will. So you have three legendary item effects that you can have on your character at any time using an item called the Canine's Cube. And that those stack with anything you have equipped. So essentially, if you have, like, for example, a legendary item every slot, each with a different effect, you'd have an additional three from the three in the Canine's Cube. Or if you have a full set of items for the set bonus, so you have six items all from one set on your body, which means you can't wear like legendary gloves, which give you an effect you want. So like say there's gloves that make poisons everyone around you when you hit something. You can't wear those gloves because you have the set piece on to get the set bonus. But you can have those gloves in your Canine's Cube and keep giving you that effect. So you can actually have like really crazy, interesting build diversity in Diablo. And obviously you have to go in and turn elective mode on and all that kind of stuff. But if you're interested in Diablo 3, there's many, many, many guides out there, because it's a 2014 game or something, maybe 2013. So there's plenty of people out there to tell you the best way to play Diablo 3. But I will say, jumping back into it, it was fantastic, to the point where, if anyone has played it, I went from having not touched it since like 2014, 2015, to playing Rift level 65, so the equivalent of Torment 13, as my necromancer in like a week. Like I played that game maybe a week and a half. Like I played that game fucking endlessly for that chunk, and that was just incredibly fun playing with friends online. Haven't done that in a while, and just straight up like as the necromancer, like using things like bone spear, blood golem, like skeleton mages, like all these things they brought back in a fantastic way from D2. That was just great. I fell in love with Diablo 3 all over again, and now I'm kind of like cooling off on it, not because necessarily that the game is bad or anything, but I feel like I've wrung a lot out of it. Like I put a good like 20, 25 hours or something into it, if I was to guess. And my friends are picking up now too, so I'm playing it with them every couple of nights. That's just awesome. It's all around massive, massive recommendation from me. If you haven't played Diablo 3 and you're interested in third-person, top-down RPG, old-school-ish RPGs, and you have for some reason haven't played Diablo 3, you should play it. Especially, and I do recommend the Necromancer as a class. It is a really fun class to play. There's just so many options in terms of how to play it, in terms of as you play through the game. And end game, every class pretty much only has a couple of options, because it depends what your sets are. That's kind of how that boils down. Like there's kind of like three end game sets or four end game sets for every class. So those kind of determine what kind of builds you can build and be competitive at, say, your Torment 13 and higher. But until that point, and assuming you don't want to put like tens of hours into the post game content, if you just want to play through the main game, maybe once or maybe a couple times at higher Torment levels, then all the classes are fantastic. All of them have massive build diversity, especially the Necromancer, and it's just fun back to back, especially if you can do it with friends. So massive recommendation. And that's what I've been playing. That's pretty much most of what I have to talk about, this like cynical supplement. It's only been 13 minutes, holy shit. But no, honestly, like there hasn't been much going on this week. It's part of why I think people haven't been necessarily motivated to come together and do a podcast. It seems like this year after E3, everyone's kind of gone off, and like, I'm not talking about the other crew members, I'm talking about developers and stuff. Like no one's releasing any massive games at the moment, obviously, except for Professor Layton, which is the most massive of games, obviously. Besides that, like, just the gaming industry's gone quiet, which I think is a good thing. It gives people time to like catch up on shit. As I said, I'll probably end up playing Layton in 9 days, and I might finally pick up and play Nier Automata, since that is 9 days, which means I do have time. I may have time to actually pick up and complete that game. With that though, the two other things I was going to talk about, So for people who don't care about anime and movies, you can essentially tune out now, but if you are interested in anime and movies, I'm going to be talking about Castlevania and Spider-Man, both of which were pretty great. I'm going to talk about Castlevania first. So if people don't know, Netflix has a animated series based on the video game series Castlevania. Specifically, Castlevania 3, which I didn't know until I watched it, and then read up about it afterwards. But it is starring Trevor and the other people he meets in fucking Castlevania 3, which includes Alucard and this girl, and I totally forgot her fucking name. I'm Googling it. Castlevania 3. Characters. Let's have a look. I think it leaves one out. I swear it leaves one out. I thought it was four playable characters. I swear there was four. Let's have a look. Who's here? Characters. Trevor is the main character. Three possible assistant characters. Come on, Wiki. Oh yeah, Cypher, which is a mage, and she's awesome in the anime series. I'll keep just going. And you have Alucard, obviously, and then they have a fucking random dude. Cypher Bailey is like Grant Dynasty, a pirate with the ability to climb on walls. Yeah, he is not in the anime, as far as I could tell. He does not exist, but. Trevor, Cypher, and Alucard are essentially featured in the anime. And I'm not going to tell you in what way they're featured. Some of them you only see for maybe one scene. Rewinding, it is Castlevania featuring characters from Castlevania 3 in the setting of Castlevania 3, but done by a Western studio, Western animation house, in an anime art style. And this seems like a recipe for being fucking terrible. But it's only 4 episodes and 80 minutes long. And I kind of just want to say, go watch it for yourself. I wanted to say that, but I can't stop myself from saying more. That series is fucking incredible. Like, I fell in love with it. It follows a anime structure wherein the first couple of episodes, and this is only 4 episodes, is more of a setup to the rest of the series. So you have the introduction to each character. That's kind of what the four episodes are. And they build up in a fantastic way where you'd think a Castlevania anime would just be Trevor goes to the castle, fights a bunch of bosses, and then fights Dracula. That's the anime. But no, they actually set up like a reason for Dracula's anger, a world, like a whole fucking societal system with different like sects in it, which have their own histories and fucking lore and like religions. And it's actually kind of intense how just in depth they go with a lot of it. Like, to be fair, like, they do use the trope of like overpowering Christian, almost like cults as the backbone. And I've criticized, for example, Far Cry recently for that same problem. But the difference here, though, is that they're more of the instigator than the focus. The focus of this series is actually, and to be fair, it's only 4 episodes and they're serving as an introduction, but the focus of the series is actually on the main characters. It's on Dracula. It's on Trevor. It's on Cypher. It's on Alucard. Like, you actually get to know the characters themselves. Well, maybe not 2 of those, and I'll let you find out for yourself which 2 you don't find out much about. But you do get to see a lot of them. And what's amazing is that it looks good for an anime. Not the best anime out there, obviously. I don't know why I said obviously, but it is not the best looking anime ever fucking drawn, but it looks very passable, very good, in fact, for an anime. And it was done by Western House, like Art House, which is crazy to me, because I wish more, like, if this is the quality Western, like, drawers or art houses can do, animation houses can do, I would love more Western anime, specifically because, yes, the animation's good, but they bring a lot to it that I find that I don't get from Japanese anime. What you have is a deep sense of knowledge about what is funny to a Western audience and what is cool to a Western audience. Like, a lot of Japanese anime is pitched towards Japan. Like, you have Japanese sensibilities, Japanese sense of humor, things that are funny because of the culture in Japan, which isn't a bad thing in any way, but it doesn't necessarily connect with a Western viewer in a way that something written by people in the West do. Like, we have different, a lot about anime is about archetypes, like archetypes of main character, archetypes of women, archetypes of whatever, like villains, etc. And we have the same thing in the West, but our archetypes are different. So when you have a Japanese hero portrayed, they're usually quite predictable in the type of hero they are. If you've seen a lot of anime, if you haven't, then obviously that's different. But if you like, you can see the parallels between pretty much every anime hero, especially if he's a male main character. However, like, just the fact that this is written by people in the West brings a whole new flavor to the main character in an anime. Like, not to say that the main character of Castlevania is unique, but he has a very different feel than a main character in any other anime I've seen. And that actually gives it a whole new twist that feels fresh and fun. I really liked, and I think that the strongest point of this is actually surprising, the writing. Who would have thought the writing of a fucking Castlevania anime would be the stand-up hero? But I think it was consistently entertaining, funny. They were subtle in some ways. They played their hand, obviously, very overtly in others. But in some cases where I wouldn't have expected the use of subtlety, they used subtlety effectively. And that was actually kind of fantastic. There's moments where they let characters just emote rather than say things. And I don't mean like the emote as in, oh, anime, they get like massive like symbols off like a sweat drop on their head or anything. I mean, just like, you know, gesticulate and make a facial expression. Characters also, they use dynamic range in this in a way that a lot of anime don't. Like, in a lot of anime, you just have characters that shout and cry. Like, that's their only two modes. Actually, maybe three. Sometimes you'll get three if you're lucky. They talk normally, they shout, or they cry. That's the thing with anime characters, which is fine because that's how drama is portrayed in apparently Japanese fiction. However, because this is actually a Western-produced show, like, you have something that's more similar to Western sensibility. So you have characters that talk like a likable asshole you would meet in real life, or someone you'd like to meet. Like, there's a character in this that reminds me a lot of Han Solo in a fantastic way, and I haven't seen many Han Solo-esque characters portrayed effectively in an anime before. The female main character of this is great and strong in a way that isn't necessarily the case in all animes. Especially animes with a male main character. Like, I know this, I said female character, but she's more of the female lead. The male lead of this is the primary lead, and that usually with animes, what you get is the supporting cast, especially if they're females, tend to be very, very weak characters. Even in things people like point to and say are great representations of women and things. Not that I'm particular like fucking person to get hung up at portrayal of women in fucking fiction, because in the end it's up to the creator. But in this, I actually really, really liked the female lead. She was awesome. I really liked the way she was portrayed. I'm not going to say who she is. You figure that out for yourself. You'll probably guess. You could probably guess. I love the way she's portrayed. I love the writing. I love the fact that characters could just talk. And also, like, talk like people in many cases. And additionally, they felt that they could, they had enough confidence to do things like have characters whisper. That sounds crazy to say, but like even if you watch movies, not many movies have the confidence to have characters just like whisper things to each other, or like not over dramatize what they're saying. Even though they're saying something dramatic, they just say it in a very calm, down, like a quietly menacing tone. Like not many things can have like the balls to go for that, and this does, and it really actually kind of impressed me. But that brings me to like the second most impressive thing about this. The first is probably writing. Second would be the voice acting. I thought was by far in a way, and a lot of people might hate me for this, but this is probably the best anime voice acting I've heard. In fact, it's better than most video game voice acting by a significant margin. It's helped by the fact that a lot of the people in it, and this is this might offend some people, but whatever. It's affected by the setting of the game, but a lot of people in this are not American. They are like British and from other parts of Europe, and essentially they're all talking with a they're talking English in an accent that's not always necessarily a British accent. It's different from one to another, and that actually makes it feel, and to be fair, it's set in Europe, so that's why I believe they didn't go for American people. But you know, with anime, fucking, they just do whatever usually. But in this, they went for Europeans sounding European, and it sounds fantastic. The delivery was excellent, I think, across the board. There's only certain moments which maybe sounded a little bit melodramatic, but if you compare this to fucking like Zelda in Breath of the Wild, that it's like different worlds. These games were, this was voice acted by a different quality of person than apparently what is acceptable in today's video games. Even up there, I'd say this was the voice acting, this was actually better than much of the voice acting in Persona 5. Like I was actually shocked. Part of that is because they have accents, so maybe people native to those areas would find the accents grating, much in the way like Americans find British people doing an American accent grating because they don't quite do it perfectly. But me as an Australian, I don't notice, so I just, oh, like, wow, Hugh Laurie is British? I would never thought House was British. Like, I couldn't tell. He sounded American to me. Besides the fact that, you know, he's in, like, a famous British actor. But, like, yeah, like, on immediate view, if I didn't know who the fuck Hugh Laurie was, I would have thought he was American. In the same way, like, I assume if you're from Europe and you hear the voice acting this, it wouldn't necessarily ring perfect for you. But if you're like me and don't have, like, a fantastic ear for accents, but just like good delivery with an interesting accent that isn't, that fits the world rather than having American accents in fucking Europe, and that many things do, it is fantastic. I love the voice acting, and the male lead of this series just stole the show in almost every scene he was in. I'd compare him to Robert Downey Jr. Not Robert fucking Downey Jr. How did I get that wrong? Captain Jack Sparrow. That guy, Johnny Depp as Captain Jack Sparrow in Pirates of the Caribbean 1. That's the level to which he just steals every scene he's in. He's, I thought, very funny, really likable, and totally not what I expected from the character he is. And you'll find out if you watch the anime. And it ends with a bang. That said, though, speaking about the only downside of this, it is a four-part series that's literally just a setup to season 2. You only get 4 episodes, like 80 minutes total runtime. Totally worth watching. I fell in love with it, but it does not come to a conclusion. All it is a setup. Season 2 has already been announced, which is fantastic. It's already been greenlit. Netflix has greenlit it, and it's totally deserving. This is a great show. It's going to be double the length. So it's going to be 8 episodes, and I believe that's the only part planned. So I think they're only going to be doing these 4 and then those 8. So a total of 12 episodes. And from the makers, their words were it's coming sooner than you'd expect, inverted commas. So I think the rumor is early 2018 for the second set of 8 episodes. It's a small team, so they can't necessarily like, turn around really quickly. But it's if they maintain this quality, which is a big if, but if they maintain this quality, I'm so down. Castlevania blew me away. It's probably my favorite thing I've experienced in the last week. I liked it so much. It was one of those things where I watched the series, then watched the last episode again, then spent a while listening to Castlevania music, which sadly isn't in the TV series. I think they're saving all the Castlevania, like, real humdingers. I can't use that word, but humdingers, like Bloody Tears and Vampire Killer or whatever. Vampire Hunter? I forget the name of that, the other, like, obvious title track. But Bloody Tears is my favorite. I think they're going to be saving those for the actual series. But this is a preview, kind of like intro, like, four-episode set. They didn't use any of the famous classic stuff. And I think that's fine. Like, it worked out well. It's not like I didn't watch it and think, oh, this is missing X music. I watched it and went, that was amazing, and then realized after the fact that it was missing X music, which means they did a great job, I think. Loved it. Moving on to the final thing, I'll talk about this cynical supplement. And if you're here, I won't be talking about spoilers like I didn't for Castlevania, aside from revealing who the cast was, which is, I don't think is a spoiler. I watched Spider-Man, and this is one of those interesting things where I got a lot of mixed, what would you call it, like, reviews, mixed thoughts about Spider-Man, across, like, from everyone I talked to. Like, Durbleton thought it was, he messaged me over Steam and said he thought it was pretty damn good, very worth watching, but ultimately forgettable. Another friend of mine said that it was better than Logan because he's a fucking crazy person, and, like, it's up there with Guardians of the Galaxy 1. Like, what? I was disbelieving the moment I heard that. Others thought it was, yeah, but across the board, everyone's liked the movie. But yeah, I got various reports as to how good it was, and I would say I'm somewhere in the middle. Like, I really liked Spider-Man. I really like the new Spider-Man. In many ways. I don't like him in every way, but, and especially don't like much of the supporting cast in the movie, but, like, overall, it was a very entertaining movie, and overall, it's definitely worth a watch. If you want to watch a movie and you're not sick of comic book movies, which, to be fair, a lot of people are at this stage, but I'm not, if you're not sick of comic book movies, I would definitely watch Spider-Man. It is a great, great watch, definitely worth the money. That said, though, I do have criticisms. Like, I found Peter Parker not insufferable, but really annoying in some ways. He'd be ultra curious one moment, like Peter Parker should be, and then the next moment he'd do something really stupid. Like, he alternates between being incredibly intelligent and incredibly stupid within minutes of each other in the scene. Like, for some reason, for example, like, one scene he tries to break 4-inch plate glass by jumping, like, 1 meter onto it. Like, that's, you can't break fucking 4-inch plate glass by jumping a meter. Like, there's that stuff. Like, to be fair, a lot of it might be, like, brought down to, okay, his character in this version of Spider-Man is only 14 years old, so he's inexperienced, blah, 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 blah. But the next scene, he's doing, like, crazy physics shit with, like, mystical, almost near mystical alien artifacts. Like, it does not make sense. I really did not appreciate pretty much every moment that he was acting like a complete idiot. Additionally, like, his sidekick in this movie is probably far too far in the two-dimensional character route. Like, he never gains depth in a way I was hoping for. There's characters in this which I think do have a bit of depth. I think they nailed the villain. He was fantastic. The Vulture, the person, fuck, I forgot, is it Michael Keaton? Michael Keaton? He used to be Batman. Fuck. I forgot. Anyway, the guy who plays fucking the Vulture in this does a great job of being a likable bad guy. And that's really important, where, like, he had motivations that made sense. He went down a dark path for what he thought was a legitimate good reason. It's like the thing where I criticized Far Cry for. I can't believe I brought up Far Cry twice this episode, but I criticize Far Cry for villains that aren't interesting. I think the Vulture did a good job of being an interesting villain and being a villain that you liked seeing succeed as well as fail, which is interesting. Michael Keaton, that's him. He did a good job being menacing in fun ways. Like, he wasn't necessarily menacing in, like, a mwahahahaha, I am Dr. Octopus or Dr. Doom. Like, he's not menacing that way. He's more of like, no, this guy is willing to pull the trigger if he had a gun on you. Like, he don't fuck with this guy. Like, he did a really great job of doing that kind of villain, which I loved. Also, the Mary Jane is in this movie, and she was probably my favorite character. Says, I don't know what that says about me. She's kind of an edgelord. I should probably, the reveal of her is fun, and seeing her through this movie is fantastic. I was not expecting that portrayal of Mary Jane, and that is, it was great. It was really refreshing to see like a really cool twist in her character. Aunt May, great. Just loved everything about that. The last scene, the last like quarter second of this movie, maybe 1 second of this movie, is probably my favorite part of the whole movie. It says a lot for what will happen in the next episode or the sequel, I would call it. But there's moments with Aunt May that feel really wonderful and genuine that I love. And Marissa Tomei, I'm pretty sure, is the person who plays her. I could look it up or whatever. I'm surprised how old they got that actually very attractive woman looking. So they did a great job with the makeup and stuff. Either that or she's actually gotten old, which I doubt, because Marissa Tomei is genuinely like, I think she's a good actress, A, and B, she's like kept herself really well put together over the years. So I wouldn't be surprised if she actually looked that old. Marissa, I'm probably going to fucking regret this, but I'm Googling Marissa Tomei. No, she's definitely kept herself together over the years. She looks older, but that's fair. She's not young anymore. I can't believe they made her look so old and that she nailed it. She looks great. She's 52 years old. Holy shit. Holy shit. Marissa Tomei is 52 years old? Wow. Okay, well, she looks 52 in the movie. And I wasn't expecting that because she usually doesn't. She did great and she played it well. The way they tied in the Avengers as a whole, I think, was great. Tony Stark's involvement as a personal Iron Man fan, I think, was fine. And actually amusing and heartfelt in ways I liked. He played kind of a caricature of Tony Stark in this, which is interesting because he's far deeper in things like the Iron Man movie and the recent Captain America Civil War movie. Like, he's a deeper character in those two. And this is kind of a two-dimensional almost character. And I guess that's kind of my major complaint about the whole thing, is that all the characters of this, except for the villain, were really two-dimensional. And that's kind of crazy to me, because Marvel is famous for having not necessarily like over complex heroes, but heroes with some depth to them and I don't know what to call them, like supporting cast that have some depth to them. Villains are usually their weakness. Like, in most Marvel movies, the villain is boring and like kind of just there for the hero to punch a bunch of times. And it's the hero that's interesting, goes through a journey. In this, it's more like the hero goes through a journey, is kind of interesting, but most of it's his own fault and just because he's being stupid, even though he's incredibly intelligent, and that just kind of served to piss me off. But the villain was the interesting one. So I liked it. It has problems, but it was a great movie. I do have criticisms, as I usually do. But no, aside from those gripes, like just from start to end, it has good pace, has likable characters that are in fun scenes together that you like seeing. Just in general, I liked seeing Spider-Man go through a journey that was different to Spider-Man's done before. This is a kind of a coming-of-age movie, in a way that Spider-Man 1 with Tobey Maguire wasn't. That this isn't a repeat of the same Spider-Man coming of age or origin story, as you would otherwise call it. This is a unique twist on that, which I really enjoyed. But yeah, overall, I think for me personally, the problems and the positives kind of balance out. The two totally balance out to the point where I came away with the movie just going, oh, it was pretty good. I recommend it, but I wouldn't necessarily say it was the greatest thing ever. It's not the greatest thing since sliced bread. Like, for example, if I was to say my top couple of comic book movies of all time, or at least in recent years, I would say obviously Logan, obviously Dark Knight. Then in terms of comedic ones, Guardians of the Galaxy and Deadpool. Like those are my upper echelons of the serious and comedic comic book movies. This is nowhere close to that upper echelon, I would say. But it is a very good one of these, and a different one of these, and it'll show you things that you haven't seen before, and that's kind of all you can really ask from a comic book movie. So that's it. That's my week. Diablo 3 is freaking awesome. Layton looks awesome and is coming back in 9 days. So definitely consider picking that up. Spider-Man was good. And I think overall, like the big winner for me of everything I've talked about this week, fucking Castlevania out of nowhere. Amazing anime. If you're not a fan of anime, still give it a shot because it's... I think the people who I've seen dislike Castlevania the most are the people who love anime the most. And the people who love anime Castlevania the most are people who like come into it expecting shitty anime and actually get a really fun, enjoyable thing. I don't want to oversell it, I guess. Like, they go into it with an open mind. It's not perfect. It has some small issues I can point to, but I'm not going to bother because I think, unlike Spider-Man, for me personally, like the goods just far outweigh the bads. But definitely, it's only 80 minutes long, so it's like less than a movie length. You can binge through it. I did it in like just before going to sleep on Monday night. You know, it's just so doable. Throw it in, see what you think of it. I think you would massively enjoy it. But hey, if you have time, play Diablo 3. That's a great game. And if you have taste and a 3DS, buy Layton. With that, thank you for listening to this single supplement. Hopefully we can get together and record a full episode sometime soon. But that's it for me. Goodbye.